I'm going to New Orleans. I'm going to Adam Troutman. I actually had a dream last night. this is my sharp analysis. I had a dream last night that Sean Payton, while petting my dog, told me, "Don't worry, Adam Troutman's going to have 60 receptions this year."
It's time to fade the chalk.
Fade the chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What is up, everybody? We are back. Another edition of the Fade the Chalk podcast, presented, of course, by the FTN Network. My name is Adam Pfeiffer. D-Bro's still out of town. I think he's fishing right now, so hopefully he's catching some nice fish. I don't even know anything about fish, so I'll just say hopefully he's catching some good ones. That's my analysis on fishing for the day. But continuing our positional previews, wrapping it up this week with the tight end position. And listen, I had to bring on, first of all, friend of the podcast, one of the greats, Dave Richard from CBS. But Dave's got to be considered the tight end whisperer. I mean, I'll let him talk about it. But Dave, thanks for coming on. Tight ends, man. You've been hitting on tight ends over the past couple of seasons, so I'm glad to have you on to preview the position for 2021.
You know me. I love to grab a good tight end. dad jokes for days. So, yeah, it's not like I designed this as much as it is just trying to take advantage of a position that's been thin in fantasy for as long as fantasy's been around. And people are always looking to get a good bargain on draft day, and they'll take it at any position. But the one position that I think people are always looking to try and beat the crowd on is tight end, because spending the draft capital on Kelce, on Kittle, on Waller, and that's not the order I have them in, by the way. Mm-hmm. I think that it makes sense at this point, but you'd much rather try and find that diamond in the rough tight end that Waller was 2 years ago. And you know, of course, we would do that with any position, right? We would love to know in advance who's the running back to get. Now, I wish I'd known this time last year that James Robinson was going to be a thing. I would have been telling everybody, just spend your round 8 pick on him. Don't worry about anything else that's going on. People want heels.
He single-handedly like kept my dynasty team afloat because I picked him up.
Yep.
And yeah, like that's, especially when the rest of your team, you're going to have good players, and you find that diamond in the rough, and it just solidifies everything.
My theory for a long time, this is a theory going back almost 20 years, Adam, is once you get to round 7, you can start gambling a little bit with your picks.
Yep.
And if you hit on even one player from round 7 on, you're going to be in really good shape.
That's what Derek and I say all the time. Like once you get past this, like round 7 or so, like don't even, and even like before that, you don't even have to, but like throw ADP out the window. Just kind of get the guys that you want. Like that's how I've been doing with a lot of these drafts already. Like guys like Darnell Mooney and Marvin Jones, and like just I'll take a receiver or a tight end or a running back that I really like a round and a half above ADP to make sure I get them.
Yeah, as long as you're not doing something stupid like taking the Browns DST in round 9 or Emmanuel Sanders in round 8 or something. You know what I mean? Like don't Larry Fitzgerald's still out there. He's going to the Hall of Fame. I'll take him in round 10. Okay, buddy. You know, the buy-in just changed for our league. Thank you very much. But be smart about it, but at the same time, this is where you take your chances. And the weird thing is I've felt for a few years now taking a chance on a tight end, whether you draft a stud early or not, is the smart thing to do just in case you hit a blue chip prospect. It's like investing in a stock. If you invest in a stock when it's at $5 a share and it goes to $100 a share, you're going to feel amazing. Mm-hmm. And you're going to live pretty richly after that too. But in fantasy, you'd love to get on board with someone who maybe the league doesn't really know about, the rest of your league, not the NFL, your fantasy league doesn't really know about. So, you know, assign qualities. What are the things that you look for from a tight end? And I, you know, I've got a list of things that I look for from a tight end, and I try and put together a list of players who fit that profile. And then I try and draft one of them. And it might not necessarily be in round 7. I don't think you'll even get Kyle Pitts, for example, in round 7. You're going to have to spend up higher than that, but we'll talk about him.
Yeah, definitely.
But the whole idea is if you spend your late picks taking shots on players who have upside and players who not only have that upside, but you're willing to wait a few weeks on. We made fun of Adam Azer on our Fantasy Football Today podcast this past week because he was a huge fan of Justin Jefferson last year, and Jefferson got off to a really slow start. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was after week two, he cut Justin Jefferson for Peyton Barber.
Oh,
all right. I feel like I just said a curse word on your podcast. Like
that happens every year though. I mean,
it happened to people year. Who drafted Alvin Kamara when he was a rookie.
I benefited from that. I picked up Alvin Kamara in his rookie year. And I remember the London game where he kind of started to break out.
He had a huge catch game. Right.
It was over.
Right. So be patient with all these picks and don't draft a player who, you know, you're not going to, it's okay if you're like Trey Lance is someone who's on my list. I know I'm going all over the place on you now, Adam, but Trey Lance is someone who I'm willing to take with a late pick. We talked
about him on the quarterback preview. Even if you don't love drafting two quarterbacks, if you're not drafting one of the top five, I think everybody's consensus top five, you know, of Mahomes, Dak, Josh Allen, Kyler, and Lamar Jackson, like if your quarterback is like Jalen Hurts, a lot of people love Jalen Hurts, but he's not set in stone. Like if you can get Trey Lance, we talked about it, like he was in the tier of the quarterbacks that aren't in anywhere close to the top 15 or whatever. But if there were quarterbacks that could make that push into the top 12, into the QB1 status, he was one of them. Like he was like, it's not even, it's similar to, you know, Lamar Jackson's rookie year. Like he was getting drafted like last couple rounds. And then all of a sudden you have the best quarterback in fantasy.
It's possible that he could, I don't know about best quarterback in fantasy, but a very good quarterback. You know, I see him as a plus size distributor of the football with huge rushing ability. Why in the world would I take Tariq Cohen in a half PPR league over Trey Lance? Oh, great. I've got Tariq Cohen. I've got that running back. And you know me, Adam, you know, I love getting running backs and I love that running back depth, but good Lord, like high upside players that I'm willing to hang on to and give, you know, a month's worth of games on my bench, unless I get hit by injuries, man, I'm going to take chances on that. And tight end fits in there. That's a position where I think you can find a lot of players that have that type of sweet potential to draft late and then just ratchet up to be a star in your lineup. And Jonnu Smith was that guy at the beginning of the year last year. I was talking him up. I thought that he had a really good opportunity. He couldn't hold on to it all year. He missed some time, and I think that kind of harpooned him. But he was in an offense that really liked to use his versatility, and I think he still is in an offense where his versatility is going to be capitalized on, provided that his hamstring is okay. Waller the year before that. And then, I mean, I could date myself here, Adam. Kittle was a guy I was high on. Gronk in his second year was a guy I was high on. Antonio Gates before he broke out.
I've heard of those guys.
Yeah. Gates was like my first late round sleeper pick ever when I was writing about fantasy for the NFL in 2003. So I think I got a strategy for this, and I think it can help people. I missed too. Tyler Eifert was that guy once upon a time.
What about
offensive coordinator tell me
Kobe
that he
Fleener.
Was going to be good? Oh, I was not a fan of Fleener when he went to New Orleans.
So you were the maybe the only one, because I was like everybody was high on him. Yeah, it didn't work out. Hayden Hurst last year didn't work out either as much.
No,
as
I was not as high on Hurst as other people were.
There it is, man. Tight end whisperer, Dave Richard. This is why you listen.
Now let's see what I come up with. If we were running the podcast right now, that would be great, but I think I got to back it up.
It's a fun position, though, even though like it's on the surface not the most appealing. Like the way you can approach the position is very interesting with roster construction and everything, and we'll break it all down in tiers and everything. But before we get started, Dave, talk about CBS and what you guys have going on. I know you always are, you guys are always doing a bunch of great stuff there, obviously, but you're also a huge, huge fan of, you know, everything, not just this fantasy football stuff you have going on, but CBS Sports in general. You guys have the live stream all day. I mean, it's just, there's so much stuff there.
So we're all sports fans, Adam, and you and I, we love football, but we pay attention to other sports too, to some degree.
Yeah, I'm a three-sport guy still. I don't know how I do it.
Yeah, I don't know how you do it either, because I've when I was a lot younger, I tried doing two sports and it was a nightmare. So I've always been with football, and that's been that. When there's breaking sports news, my go-to move is to log on to CBSSportsHQ.com, or if I'm away from the house and not in front of a computer, I go on my phone to the free CBS Sports app, and I watch CBS Sports HQ. They're reacting to the breaking news. They're not repeating the news. They're reacting to it. They've got really smart analysts, people who played the game or coached in the game, whatever game we're talking about, baseball, football, college sports, whatever, you know, the Olympics, whenever there's breaking news, there's reaction to it. And it gives you smart analysis. So then when you're hanging out with your buddies, you won't sound like a doofus or stand there nodding your head and not saying anything because you're scared to contribute to the conversation. You're going to know exactly what to say because you've heard experts talk about whatever the breaking sports news is. You know, there's been a ton of injuries and players that are gonna miss time in the NBA playoffs. CBS Sports HQ was the perfect place to go to find out, well, how are the Clippers gonna get by without Kawhi Leonard? And we had analysts and betting guys on there saying, well, you better take the Clippers, even though they're, you know, they don't look as good without Kawhi Leonard, they're getting too many points, and sure enough, the Clippers beat the Jazz. So yeah. when you want breaking sports news, when sports news breaks, we all want breaking sports news because that's when chaos happens and that's a lot of fun. But when it breaks and you want to know the story behind the story and you don't want to pay a dollar for it and you don't want to even give your email address for it, you go to CBSSportsHQ.com or you download the free CBS Sports app and you tune in for 5 to 10 minutes and you're dialed in on what's happening in the world of sports. And it's not bogus crap where people are yelling at each other and debating and all that stuff. It's news and it's highlights. There's highlights too. I know people who wake up in the morning and they immediately go on their smart television and put on CBS Sports HQ. And they're watching all the highlights from baseball and hockey and basketball from the night before. And we do a lot of fantasy on there too. Mm-hmm. It is definitely got a lot of fantasy. Jamie Eisenberg, me, Heath Cummings, Chris Towers, we're on there all the time talking about fantasy, and it's not just football, it's baseball as well. So you'll be a smarter fantasy manager by watching CBS Sports HQ. And that's where our live show is during the football season, is on CBS Sports HQ. So that's really the big thing that's going on the streaming channel. But I do also want to bring up a project that I finished doing, which is my projected strength of schedules. Adam, I do this every year where I grade every defense, and I really went crazy this year. Not only did I grade every defense based on their pass rush, their pass coverage, their run defense, I took it a step further for running backs. How do defenses guard running backs? How do they do against running backs out of the backfield, catching passes out of the backfield? And then how do defenses do, basically grading linebackers and safeties against tight ends? How do I expect defenses to play tight ends this year? And so I come up with a grade. I plug it into the NFL schedule. It spits out a number at the end that says, all right, this number is really low. That means it's an easy schedule for a team. Or this number is really high. This team's going to have a nightmare schedule. And it acts as a tiebreaker in fantasy. It makes people, if you're debating between, here, I'll apply it right now to fantasy tight ends. Let's say you're debating between taking Mark Andrews and TJ Hockenson. And, you know, some people have Hockenson ranked ahead of Andrews. And
I would say a lot of people are debating that, actually.
Well,
so that's a good one.
Would it help you to know that Mark Andrews has the, hold on, I got to actually count here, 9th worst projected strength of schedule for tight ends. 9th worst. That's bad. But TJ Hockenson has the worst projected strength of schedule for tight ends over the balance of the season. Would that help you make a decision? If you knew in advance that the matchups would be, they're going to be tough for both of them, but if you knew that they were a little bit easier for Mark Andrews, would that help point you in the direction of drafting Andrews ahead of Hockenson?
Yeah, I mean, you can, like, if, and I think a lot of people, if it's like, it's going to be close coming down between Hockenson and Andrews, absolutely you can use that as a tiebreaker.
That's the point. So we have a whole tiebreaker for every position. And we even did a breakdown of the first 4 weeks for every position. So that means that you'll be able to identify which players have an early schedule that's good. And that'll help you also take Mark Andrews. He's got the second best projected strength of schedule for the first 4 weeks of the season. So the Ravens schedule actually starts off really nicely. This is the reason why I still like Marquise Brown. What's that?
I think they have the Raiders week one, don't they?
Yeah. That's going to be an ass kicking. and so, like, I think like the first 9 weeks of the season, something like that, the Ravens schedule looks really nice. And then it turns to poo. And at that point, you probably think about selling high on Marquise Brown if he's having a good year. And you've got to at least consider the idea of selling high on Andrews or Lamar Jackson. But you don't have to worry about that now when you're drafting them. The overall tiebreaker is that the schedule is easier. Bottom line, for Andrews over Hockenson. Hockenson's schedule is a nightmare all season long. So that's something that I've been doing. You can go to my author page on CBSSports.com. You Google Dave Richard CBS and a link will come up to all the stuff I've written. And there's 8 stories breaking down the schedule and they all link from each other. and you'll be able to break down which players have an advantage with the schedule. And I'll tell you on this podcast when we get to the players, and that's a hint, players that have the best schedule for tight ends, best projected strength of schedule for the year.
It's great stuff. As always, I highly recommend everybody go to CBS Fantasy. It's been, since I started, you know, it's been my favorite spot. That's why, you know, I told you and Jamie and Heath and all the guys this before, but, you know, one of the main reasons I'm doing what I'm doing is because of you guys. So always love to have you guys on the podcast anytime. Let's get to these tight ends, though, Dave. And tier one, I mean, obviously, Travis Kelce. The question is he in a tier by himself? Because it's very, very likely that he is. And then the obvious big three is Kelce, Darren Waller, and George Kittle. How do you have those three kind of separated going into the season?
I've got Kelce in a tier by himself, and I think you have to have him in a tier by himself. Because there's no other tight end that you could consider taking where everybody's going to take Kelce. I mean, I was in a mock draft this week where Kelce went fourth. I'm not joking. Fourth overall, Adam Azer took him just to experiment, and he loved it.
I don't even think it's because, like, I think everybody knows that McCaffrey and Dalvin are the top two running backs. And then there's a question mark of who's three. Like, I have Zeke three. A lot of people probably have Barkley. A lot of people, you know, you can Derrick Henry. Like, but if, I mean, Travis Kelce is without a doubt a first round pick. So, like, if you take him four and you don't want to have to debate between that running back, like, even as great as Darren Waller has been and how talented George Kittle is, like, there's no one close to Travis Kelce. There's just not. He's a receiver.
He's been the number one tight end in PPR five straight seasons.
It's unbelievable.
Enough said. I think his worst year came when Mahomes got hurt. Mm-hmm. So as long as Mahomes is healthy, you can pencil in 18 PPR points per game from Travis Kelce. And the last year he got more than that. So I think he deserves to be in his own tier.
I think when you look at your matchup, right, sure. and you're streaming tight end. Say you have, like, I don't know, like Logan Thomas. I guess he wasn't a streamer last year. He was a legitimate starter. But say you're kind of just piecing together the position and you like your matchups. Like, oh, I like my running backs better than him. My receivers are close, whatever. And then you look and they have Kelce. And it's like, all right, well, let's hope he only has 6 for 80 in a touchdown today. Like,
right. You have to be able to absorb that. He's definitely an advantage booster.
Yeah.
When you get him in your lineup, I don't know if I can vouch for taking him at four. I think if you like him that much, then maybe you should try trading down. Mm-hmm. And then at least you'll get to pick earlier in round two, theoretically. You would if you traded draft slots. So hopefully your league would allow something like that. And you shouldn't even care that he's got the 11th toughest schedule. Who cares? He could take on the Ravens and the Steelers every other week, and we'd still start him blindly. And then Waller and Kittle, I think, deserve their own tier. And they're going in that range. I think it's more like late second into early third for those two guys. I think that they both warrant it. They both are de facto number one wide receivers on their teams. But I do like Waller a little bit more. I like that he played more games last year, averaged more points per game in both PPR and non-PPR by a significant amount last year. And I also like that Waller's target share doesn't seem to be threatened at all, whereas Kittle has Ayuk there, has Deebo Samuel there. Those guys are going to take some work away now that they're healthy. The run game is still going to be a focal point of this offense. But if Trey Lance is the quarterback, when a play is breaking down, he's not necessarily looking to throw. He'll run. And when they're inside the 10, he's not necessarily going to be interested in throwing. He'll run. And so those take away pass attempt opportunities that could go to Kittle, especially in valuable areas of the field. So I think Waller gets a nod there. He's healthier. He gets more targets per game. They were actually very close in targets per game in 2019. Kittle 7.6, Waller 7.3. But I think the difference at quarterback, when it does eventually happen for the 49ers, and it will happen this year, it's just a matter of it's, you know, week 8, week 4, week 1, whatever. Waller's, I think he profiles better. So I would draft Waller ahead of Kittle.
I agree.
Redraft, dynasty, what have you. I think he's worth it, but it wouldn't surprise me if Kittle goes within 5 picks of Waller. And
yep. I talked about it.
It's almost like a signal will get shot in the sky when Waller goes. It's like a warning to the rest of the league. Okay, there's only one great tight end left. Who's going to make a move on him first? And someone might even do it with the very next pick.
And I talked about it. Like, I don't see a lot of drafts right now where I even have George Kittle on my team, because if I'm taking a tight end, I'm taking Waller over him. 28% target share last year, led the position. Like, their defense is still pretty bad in Las Vegas. And I know they try to be a run first team, but their offensive line is depleted. Like, I don't see a way they're going to be able to be the run first team they really want to, especially with Josh Jacobs' efficiency going down last year. So, like, I would rather take Waller. And then, like you said, like, Kittle's going to go where Kittle's going. I would still rather take the running backs and receivers, just because I do worry a little bit about the overall volume of passing in that San Francisco offense. So I actually have three tiers. I think I have all three of these guys in their own tier, because I actually have Waller in his own tier. If you want to have Kittle with him, totally get it. Kittle, if he stays healthy and can get like six or seven targets a game, let alone if he gets more, he's going to be great. He's obviously, you know, as complete as it comes at the position, but it's going to be hard for me to get George Kittle on a lot of teams, just because I want the guaranteed targets from Darren Waller. The Raiders didn't, they threw to the receivers at one of the lowest rates in the NFL last year. Obviously that coincides with Darren Waller getting all the targets. I mean, 107 catches last year, just ridiculous volume. But yeah, like, Kittle's one of those players, and there's a handful of players this year where I'm afraid to miss out on them, and Kittle's one of them. Like, I don't see myself drafting him, but there's no denying what George Kittle can do in a 17-game season if he stays relatively healthy.
He just needs to have that target share go back to where it was in 2019, where it was almost 8 per game. I mean, he had almost 8 per game last year. I think that's unfair for me to say, so I'll take it back. But if he stays real close to 8 targets per game, then he should be just fine. But I'm a little worried. What if it slips to 7 targets per game? I'd rather have Waller, who last year, 9.1 targets per game.
Yeah, and they didn't add anybody, right? They replaced Aguilar with John Brown.
Who's, you might say, the that they role. Upgraded. They might have upgraded from Aguilar to John Brown, but I mean, Brown's got to stay Smoke. Healthy.
Yeah, I love Smoke. He's just got to stay healthy. Yep. And they'll probably get more from Bryan Edwards. You know, he only played like 11 games and was not even a full-time player. He was like under 30% of the snaps all year. So like, maybe that'll help, but this is Darren Waller's offense. And by the way, just side note, it's incredible to see what he's done with his career the last couple of years. It's awesome.
Yes.
Tier three. I have four guys in tier three. I have Mark Andrews, TJ Hockenson, Dallas Goedert, and Kyle Pitts. I am team... he's probably the most interesting player on this podcast. So let's start with him. Kyle Pitts.
I thought you were going to say Goddard.
Well, it leads into that for me, actually.
Okay. All right. I was just being a jerk.
Okay.
Pitts is the guy that everybody...
Yeah.
Log into a tight end podcast, yep, they want to know about Kyle Pitts.
It all coincides for me. I tweeted it yesterday. I would much rather take Dallas Goedert at his ADP than Kyle Pitts at his. And it's not like, we all know the talent Kyle Pitts is. And yeah, you can make the argument rookie tight ends don't produce in year one. I think we'd all agree this is a different situation because A, he's one of the best tight end prospects we've seen. And B, all of a sudden Julio Jones isn't catching passes for the Falcons anymore. And he's going to, I mean, there's not many tight ends that you can pencil in for close to 100 targets. And I think Kelsey's obviously getting there. Waller's getting there. You can make the case that Pitts will get there, but I think Goddard could get there too. Like, Devonta Smith has the chance to be an alpha, but they still don't have a lot of pass catchers in Philadelphia. I think they're going to throw the ball more than people think. And I just think Goddard going, you know, a couple rounds later, because I think Kyle Pitts by the end of the summer, he's a you know, a hyped up player, a high touted prospect. Julio Jones is gone. It's a pass first offense. Like, he's going to be a fourth round pick or fifth round pick. And you can make the case he might even start going ahead of Hockenson and Andrews if he's not already. So I don't think Kyle Pitts' season is going to be drastically different or like insanely better than Dallas Goedert. So Kyle Pitts for me, like, I actually still have him like last in this tier. Like, I have him as my tight end. So I'd be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7. He's my tight end 7. I haven't moved him up. I still think I prefer Goddard, Hockenson, and Andrews, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, the first thing you've got to come to grips with as a fantasy drafter is how do you really feel about taking the chance on Kyle Pitts. And if you're of the camp of, well, rookie tight ends typically don't do well, and I'm not sure what to make of this Falcons offense, you should just resign yourself to the fact that you're not going to get him, because it's going to be highly unlikely that you're in a draft with 9 or 11 other guys who just don't.
If you're hesitant at all to take Kyle Pitts, you're probably not going to.
You're not, because there's for every one person who's hesitant to take him, there's probably two who are completely at the other end of the spectrum. Right. They can't wait to draft him. All right. And the reason why makes a lot of sense. His athletic profile is off the charts. he's going to be a matchup nightmare from day one for defenses because of his size and his speed and his catch radius and all the things that we saw from Florida. And he's going to get a huge opportunity. I view him as a wide receiver that we're blessed to start as a tight end. And so if you think of him that way, and so he's not your traditional tight end, he's much more of a wide receiver, and he's going to be using this Atlanta offense just like a wide receiver, that should change your perspective a little bit, because we have seen rookie wide receivers, especially over the past couple of seasons, make an impact. And it might not happen in week one or week two, hello, Justin Jefferson, but it happens. And I think that the opportunity is going to be there. And that's another huge thing. So we know he's got the athletic profile. We know that he's going to have the opportunity. They just traded away Julio Jones. Who else is going to? You think Russell Gage is going to get 8 targets per game in this offense? Well, maybe, because that defense is bad, and I don't know what to make of the run game.
Yeah, he might just get there off volume alone.
But I think Pitts is going to have volume too. I don't think there's going to be many games where he goes 3 for 23 and no touchdowns.
And Arthur Smith being there definitely
that's
makes
the third
me
thing.
More intrigued with Kyle Pitts. I mean, former tight ends coach, obviously now the coordinator there. He plays with a lot of play action. I feel like play action tends to benefit tight ends.
Very much
especially
so.
With, you know, tight ends of the athletic profile of Kyle Pitts. So, again, talking about players I'm scared to be wrong on, not that I think Kyle Pitts is going to be bad. I just like getting a similar tight end or a tight end I have ranked higher a couple rounds later. But by no means do I think Kyle Pitts is going to be bad this year. Like, I think Arthur Smith is going to have and already is having a field day with Kyle Pitts.
I think that's the third pillar that you look for when you're trying to find a tight end. And maybe that's like the secret pillar. So athletic profile is one. Opportunity is another, because some tight ends are really good athletes, but they're on teams loaded with wide receivers. They're just not going to have a path to 100 targets.
Dawson Knox, literally. That's perfect.
I mean, when I was thinking about doing this podcast with you today, Adam, it was a name that came up in my mind. And yeah, like, you know, if Beasley goes down and if Emmanuel Sanders goes down, like, that's what it's going to have to take for Dawson Knox to really start to ratchet up the targets. But Kyle Pitts doesn't have that problem. He's going to see a lot of targets in this offense. And his coach has already demonstrated in Tennessee that he loves to utilize tight ends. He didn't just do it with one guy either. It was Janu. Right. It was Anthony Firkser. Like, you can run down the list, and he's been working with tight ends. Like you said, he came in as a tight ends coach, and he was with the Titans for a long time.
Just under 30% of their targets last year went to tight ends. And that was with Janu missing time. Like you said, like, it was Firkser running routes. It was Michael Pruitt getting end zone targets, like Jeff Swaim. Like,
yeah,
Arthur Smith is and Derek loves Arthur Smith. Like, he it's like, I think it's his favorite coach/coordinator in the NFL. Like, he play action. He's a huge play action guy, like Arthur Smith, obviously. But like, D'Bro loves coaches that run a lot of play action. And Matt Ryan in his career has been good in play action. So
it's a good fit. It's a good fit. But I think it's Matt Ryan's fantasy season is going to come down to just how big of a year Kyle Pitts has.
Absolutely.
And so now we've identified all the things that you want in a fantasy tight end, and Pitts has it. When do you draft him? And this is the game of matching him up against the other tight ends that we're talking about here in this tier, which is Andrews and Hockenson. And I think those guys have a clear path to really good numbers on their respective teams, and they've got experience on their side. So I understand, like, if you had to take one of those, Andrews in round 5 is almost like a steal, but if you had to take Hockenson in round 5, I think you'd be a little more comfortable doing that rather than rolling the dice on Kyle Pitts. Pitts, I think, is going to end up being a 6th-round pick in most leagues. I think that's where you'll see him go. Someone will step up and take him there before you get into the gambling rounds of round 7+. And I don't think there's a lot of downside to it. I'll ask you, Adam, does he not have the profile of finishing the year as a top 3 or 4 fantasy tight end?
Yeah, I wouldn't. Like, it's going to take Kelsey or Waller to miss time for them not to be top 2. But like, if Kyle Pitts finished 3rd, I wouldn't be shocked.
Okay. And so that's his upside, right?
Yeah. And I think it depends on how you build your team too. Like, say in the first couple of rounds, especially at receiver, say you draft your starting receivers are like these high floor receivers like a Michael Thomas or Keenan Allen.
Sure.
Then I might be a little bit more inclined to go Kyle Pitts because there's a little bit more of the unknown with him. But yeah, I mean, if he's still going the 6th round, no problem with Kyle Pitts. But I just think by the end of the summer, we're going to see training camp reports, and then we have preseason for once. You know,
oh, sure. If the first so time might, he catches, I mean, a pass in the preseason,
yeah, we're already seeing it with guys like Elijah Moore right now. Like,
yeah,
like every single day, Elijah Moore is absolutely wowing in Jets mini camp. So it's like, once that happens with Kyle Pitts, especially in a preseason, remember the Amir Abdullah run? in preseason. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
If
yep,
Kyle
yep.
Pitts has something like that, I mean, look out. And it sounds dumb to say that that's going to be the reason his
ADP jumps.
But that's
how the general population works. Yeah. When the general public sees these highlights of players in the preseason, they gravitate. Same thing with Hard Knocks. When there's a player on Hard Knocks that gets, you know.
I think that happened with the Bengals for me, with Gio and Tyler Eifert. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Happened with Waller, too. Mm-hmm. The Raiders were the Hard Knocks team that year. It was Gruden's first year there, and they did a whole, like, half of an episode was all about Darren Waller. And I thought that was just going to shoot his, and I was already talking him up by that point, and I thought that was going to shoot up his draft stock to a point where I wasn't sure if I wanted him. And it didn't quite do that, so I was thrilled for that, but it could happen. I don't think the Falcons are going to be the Hard Knocks team this year. That would be a little weird. But it doesn't really matter. The point is that if there's hype about a player in the preseason, the public is going to go after that. And so that'll make sharp fantasy drafters maybe fade it a little bit. But there really isn't any. I don't think there's a tight end that we can look at and say, it wouldn't surprise me if he finished behind Kelce and Waller, like we just said about Pitts. Mm-hmm. But can you say that about Goddard?
Probably. Like, yeah. Like, while I prefer Goddard at his ADP, I'm like, if both Goddard and Pitts hit their ceiling, I don't think there's a question who has the higher ceiling. It's Kyle Pitts, especially in that offense. But I've been getting, like, Goddard's probably been the tight end I've been gravitating towards the most, just because he goes after all these guys, and it's still an offense where I think he's going to get, you know, 6 or 7 targets per game. And obviously, Zach Ertz, it's only a matter of time before he's playing somewhere else. So it's really just Devonta Smith and Goddard leading this offense. But I agree. Like, I don't think he's going to have like an outlier touchdown season or something like that to be a top three tight end. Andrews, we've obviously seen the touchdowns. And then Hockenson's going to come down to just one of those tight ends I talked about that can get 100 plus targets this year. I mean, we know we've talked about the Lions receiving options a ton already this offseason, but Hockenson on this team that's expected to be bad could see, you know, 110 targets. Like, I don't think out of the question. Maybe even more than that.
And I think they don't, like you said, they don't really have a receiver that's going to command a lot of work. So it's almost like the exact type of scenario that happened to Darren Waller last year and the year before, where the receivers aren't that good. Quarterback needs a best friend. Here's a trusty target with a good athletic profile. Does the coaching staff want to lean on a tight end? I think they kind of have no choice, but we've seen Anthony Lynn utilize tight ends before. So I wouldn't be shy about Hockenson. The only thing that bothers me about Hockenson is that he's been a little bit of a disappointment at times over his first 2 years. And the schedule, like I said, is really, really scary, but it hasn't been enough so far for me to say, oh, I got to get Kyle Pitts. I got to have him on my team ahead of Hockenson. So it's a close call between those two, because I'm not quite sure I feel comfortable taking Hockenson in round 5. It's probably going to take me getting into a draft that means something, and it's round 6 and they're both on the clock, and I'm going to have to make a call on, well, do I really feel this way about Hockenson? And I think I will. I think that he also would not surprise me if he finishes a top 3 tight end. So maybe that's the only other tight end that we'll talk about, besides Kittle, of course, and Mark Andrews, that has that top 3 ceiling. But I think Hockenson and Pitts, once you get away from the top 4, I think those are the only two that have it. Can I try and talk you off of Dallas Goedert?
Go for it.
How many red zone targets did he have with Jalen Hurts last year?
I was looking this up. I don't, like, not the exact number, but I was doing some research when I was writing about Goddard, and I didn't come across him getting a lot of targets in close.
He had as many as Dave Richard and Adam Pfeiffer had.
I had one, actually. I went to an Eagles game and he threw me the ball.
You know what? That's good. Hopefully it wasn't a foot and a half over your head like it might be for other receivers on that team. 0 red zone targets for Dallas Goedert. He had 3 from just inside of 25 yards. They were all incomplete. 2 of them were in the end zone. They were both against Arizona. They were not catchable. 14.1% target share from Jalen Hurts. 5.7 targets per game from Jalen Hurts. 63% catch rate, 6.6 yards per attempt, Hurts to Goddard last year. Compare that to with Wentz, he had a 74% catch rate, 8.7 yards per target. And I think Devontae Smith is the real deal. I think he's going to help Jalen Hurts out a lot, and I think he will be the reason why Dallas Goedert's targets will either stay where they were, which is 5.7 per game, or decline a little bit to maybe like 5, maybe even 4.9. It's gross to even suggest such a thing. And then it's the same thing that could befall Kittle in the red zone with Trey Lance could easily happen to Goddard in the red zone, where Jalen Hurts just calls his own number or a play breaks down and he sees a way to get into the end zone. He sees some grass in front of him and he takes it in. That'll take touchdowns away from Dallas Goedert. So I don't see that upside with Goddard that you see. And that's why I'll take Pitts ahead of Goddard. It's the only difference we have in our tiers so far.
So this is why I love doing the podcast and just kind of breaking stuff down. I'm going to move Kyle Pitts ahead of Dallas Goedert now. You have convinced me. I still, at times, depending on where the ADPs go, don't mind waiting two rounds to get Goedert. But I do need to move Kyle Pitts ahead of Dallas Goedert in my ranking. So I will do that. Thank you,
Dave Richard. Take in a mock draft. And you'll be faced with the decision of Pitts versus Goedert. Mm-hmm. And it's a mock, so take Pitts and see how you feel about it.
It's a good idea. We do a lot of mock drafts here on the pod, so I'm
perfect. So the next time you get a chance, go get Pitts and see if you like your team better. But to me, if I'm gambling on upside with a tight end, I don't mind Pitts in round 6, especially compared to Goddard in round 7, because I'm scared that Goddard can't get there with Hurts as his quarterback. Sure. I think he will complement Jalen Hurts. I think he'll be a top 10 fantasy tight end, but I don't see him busting through, and I don't see a path to 100 targets for Dallas Goedert.
Well, we'll see if this next tier, because like after the top 7 tight ends, it gets rough. I mean, you have guys like everybody in left has question marks, right? I mean, Noah Fant, the quarterback play, plus the fact that Cortland Sutton's back and they have a lot of pass catchers there. Irv Smith, who we have to talk about. I love Irv Smith. But there was a report from Mike Zimmer about his role not changing, run first offense, maybe their defense is better, and they still
I'll help you with that too.
Yeah. I love Irv Smith still. Logan Thomas, you know, you saw it for 1 year, new quarterback, Curtis Samuel gets there, Robert Tonyan, like a 19% touchdown rate, that's obviously unsustainable, but the Aaron Rodgers situation. And then you have like the breakout guys, right? Like Adam Troutman, these are kind of, I would put these guys in tier 5, but like Troutman, Cole Kmet, Anthony Firkser was kind of in that for me, but then the Julio trade. But let's talk about tier 4. Like, who do you have in the next tier? Is it the guys I mentioned, like Noah Fant, Irv, Logan Thomas, and Tonyan?
I've got a different name in there instead of Logan Thomas because I'm worried about a big regression from Logan Thomas.
Sure.
But maybe you're the one that can convince me on Logan Thomas and keeping him right back in as a starting fantasy tight end.
I literally only have him in here just because I know he has a role, and I don't know that about some of the other tight ends in tier 5. So I just kind of gave him the benefit of the doubt.
So let's fine tooth comb it with these guys. I've got Irv Smith next. He's my tight end 8.
Yes.
Fant is after
tight end 8 as well.
Fant is after him. I've got Janu after him. Then I've got Tonyan.
That's four the guy names. I almost put in tier 4, and I'm actually been warming up to Janu the last couple weeks. Just because I still think the way this Patriots offense has been constructed is when Cam was at his best, right? The MVP season with Carolina, he had speed and field stretchers on the outside and reliable tight end play in the middle with Greg Olsen. I think that's kind of what they're building in New England.
Well, I think the Patriots are one of those teams that wanted to get their tight end game back to where it was. Look, think of all the success they had with Gronk.
Belichick's been eyeing Hunter Henry for years.
He's loved Hunter Henry's game. That wasn't a surprise, other than they had just spent a ton of money of Janu. Like, if you had told me before they signed Janu that they were going after Hunter Henry, I would have said, yeah, and sky's blue and grass is green. But they got them both. And to me, that just, it screams, we want to get back to what we were doing in the early 2010s with Gronk and Aaron Hernandez. So I think that's what they're going to try and get going, is have Janu as a wide receiver, not really as a typical tight end. And Hunter Henry is going to be more of the traditional tight end. And you know how the Patriots have always played the matchups with their running backs? And they'll use a certain running back based on either the flow of the game, which no one knows how that's going to go until the game's actually happening, or based on how they perceive their opponent's defense to play. And they'll kind of piece together how their run game will go on a week-to-week basis. And I even know for a fact that like the running backs themselves don't even know what the game plan is usually. They're in the flow of it and they just follow the coach's lead. I think it's going to be like that for their entire offense. I think that they're in a position this year where they feel more comfortable with what Cam can do as a passer, and they've surrounded him with solid enough weapons to where they're going to attack the absolute weaknesses of defenses and try and find those matchups each week that they can take advantage of. And the one player in that offense that I think they can use routinely to take advantage of matchups in the passing game is Janu, because he's so fast, because he's so big and strong, and we've seen it in his time in Tennessee. And I think the Patriots craved having somebody like that so that they could play that matchup chess game that a lot of coaches really look for. Yeah, so I mean, he's a fit for what the coaching staff wants.
It was Izzo, like their tight ends combined for like what, 30 targets.
It was terrible.
Yeah. I mean, and to be fair, they had like maybe the worst group of pass catchers I've ever seen, but like, yeah, even still, like they still didn't even throw to their tight ends because there was nobody there. It was Ryan Izzo and why am I blanking on who they drafted and what the second
Dalton
round?
Keene and Devin Asiasi.
Yeah, Asiasi.
And I think that draft spend was a signal to us that they wanted to be
right
back in the tight end game, and they swung and missed on both in a year to the point where they said, well, screw these guys. We're moving on. We're going to spend money on free agents, and
everybody was shocked. We're like, the Patriots are spending money, and the first two players they spent it on essentially were Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith. So you want to talk about showing your hand.
They've done it. You know, the NFL teams, certainly during the season, but especially in the offseason, their actions speak louder than words. And Bill Belichick has never been one to give away anything with his words. So we go off of his actions. And so the investments that they've made at tight end, the one that went bust last year and the one that we hope goes boom this year, matters. And I told you I would tell you the team that I graded with the easiest schedule this year, it's the Patriots. Jonnu's got the easiest schedule, according to my grading, of any tight end in football. And by the way, they've got the third easiest schedule for their wide receivers. So if Jonnu is more of a receiver than a tight end, it works out that way for him too.
And I'll tell you what, for Jonnu, I can't predict injuries, but if Matt Milano misses time for Buffalo again, we saw how bad they were against tight ends last year without Matt Milano.
It's a jailbreak. It's a jailbreak for him. He'll have a monster game. So you've got to get over Cam Newton's 2020 and the fact that he was such a miserable passer. I don't think it's a lock that he's going to be the starter to begin the year. I just think that's what, you know, old school coaching staffs are going to do, though, is start with the incumbent and then move in the rookie. Eventually, Mac Jones is going to have to play like a megastar in order to get in there. And he's had some pretty brilliant moments, apparently, in offseason workouts. Although for me, Adam, when I read the offseason workout clippings, I'm looking for bad news because I expect every player to be good and look good. And, you know, Elijah Moore playing well doesn't surprise me. But hearing about there aren't a lot of bad clippings this time of year, but Breshad Perriman was inconsistent. Wait, tell me where you haven't heard that before, but that made me want to just put him on take him out of my top 150, like not even think about him on draft day. So anybody that's doing poorly this time of year, take note of that. Don't take note of, wow, Najee Harris looks like he's going to be awesome. Well, of course, right, he's going to look awesome.
But no, I agree. Like, I think Jonnu is going to be the more consistent receiving tight end between him and Hunter Henry. So I've definitely been moving him up. Let's talk about Irv Smith, because I'm not moving off him after the Mike Zimmer report.
Good.
I'm really not. Like, if Irv Smith was being drafted as like the tight end 4 and that report came out, sure, move him down, whatever, adjust if you want. But like, he's being drafted like at tight end 10 or so. Like, and you look at how he ended the season last year when Kyle Rudolph was out from weeks 14 to 17. Irv Smith was the tight end 4 in fantasy. He averaged around 13 fantasy points per game. He had 4 end zone targets during that span. That was the second most, or tied for the most among all tight ends during that span. It was a sign of what they've seen in him. And when he's been on the field, like, he's not just a catch the ball from 4 yards out and go down. Like, he's making plays down the field. I do worry a little bit about the passing volume if this defense is better, which it should be. But I give this guy 5 targets a game, 6 targets a game, he's going to produce. So I'm not really giving up on that upside. I know they're talking up Tyler Conklin, but like, yeah, he said Irv Smith's role is not going to change. If his role is what it was at the end of the season, I don't know if it has to change necessarily.
I agree. And when he's talking about the role changing for Irv Smith, I think he's thinking about playing time. And exactly, not necessarily, you know, you're going to go from a blocking tight end to a receiving tight end. I think he knows how he's going to use Irv Smith, and I think we know how he will be used. But I've got his snap count. In the four games without Rudolph, he saw more than 82% of the snaps in three of four. It's hard to improve on that. I mean, are you picky enough where he's got to play 100% of the snaps? There aren't a lot of tight ends that do that. And
here's the other thing. Snaps with tight ends don't matter. I want tight ends running routes.
Sure.
Really.
And maybe that's something that I can look into for those last three or four games. I can tell you he had 20 targets in those four games. He had a 75% catch rate. You mentioned the four end zone targets. He had three touchdowns. But he played a lot even when Kyle Rudolph was healthy. He was playing 60% of the snaps in six of the nine games prior to the Rudolph injury, whereas Tyler Conklin was not. Conklin was right around 25% of the snaps or more in not even half of 12 games prior to Rudolph's injury. And then when he got in with Rudolph out of there, his playing time did go up, and he actually had more targets than Irv Smith did without Rudolph, but it was only one more. Same amount of catches, slightly fewer yards, and you know, only one touchdown for Conklin. It does put a cap on Irv Smith, and I think Irv always had a cap on not finishing as like a top four tight end.
Sure.
But if you draft him inside the top 10 tight ends, I think he's got a very nice chance to return as a top 10 tight end. I think he can be 700 yards and six touchdowns, something like that, which aren't numbers that are going to blow you away, but that's still going to be good enough to finish as a quality tight end in fantasy.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I haven't moved off him. I still prefer him over Logan Thomas and Robert Tonyan and Noah Fant. Noah Fant's close. I think like Noah Fant has a better chance of getting more receptions and yards, but like, I still think Irv Smith is in a good enough situation. So before we get out of here, like, I know I talked to you and I know who you're going to bring up. I already know who it is. But if you're going from outside of tier four, a couple tight ends that could break through this year, and I know where you're going, I'm assuming you're going to New Orleans. But there are a couple guys down here that are intriguing as late round tight end selections.
I'm hesitating being sarcastic and being like, give me all the Jared Cook shares I can handle, baby. I'm going to New Orleans. I'm going to Adam Trautman. I actually had a dream last night. this is my sharp analysis. I had a dream last night that Sean Payton, while petting my dog, told me, don't worry, Adam Trautman's going to have 60 receptions this year. And I've already done the film study on Adam Trautman. And I came away
liking that. Right there is why they call you the tight end whisperer, by the way.
Right. They're whispering to me in my dreams. weird that I'm dreaming about. I don't even know how the hell that happens, that Sean Payton is in my dreams. But it was after a preseason game. I was in his office with other reporters. I have no idea how this happened. All right. Look, Trautman. I like the way that he moved last year running his routes better than when he had the ball in his hands. It was kind of weird. It was almost like you could tell that he was thinking when he had the ball in his hands, and he was like a little bit slower. Maybe he was just being careful because he didn't want to turn the ball over. But when he was running his routes, he was ditching defenders. He was making good moves. He's got good speed. Not good speed. He's got solid speed, Adam, but he's got good size. And I think that that's something that can really help him fill that void left over from Jared Cook, whereas Cook might have been maybe a little bit more athletic and maybe a little bit faster. But I think that that size is going to help him break tackles, pick up yards after the catch, and absolutely be a red zone factor for New Orleans. There's also a huge opportunity in New Orleans. Emmanuel Sanders is gone. Cook, I said, is gone. That's over 140 targets right there. And you look at the track record of Saints tight ends. It hasn't been great in terms of catches. They've been anywhere from 16th to second fewest receptions the last four seasons among their tight end group in receptions. But 2 years ago, they had the second most tight ends or touchdowns for tight ends with 12. Last year, they were tied for the eighth most touchdowns for tight ends with 9. 21 touchdowns to their tight ends over the last two seasons. I think that's pretty good. It would help Trautman if Jameis Winston is the quarterback.
Yeah, that's
for
what I was
obvious
ask,
reason. So it's going to help everybody in the passing game if Jameis is the quarterback. But we've seen Jameis has been one of a handful of quarterbacks that we've seen this kind of like tendency develop where they lean on their tight end in college and it carries with them into the pros. And, you know, it's how Cameron Brate became a thing. It's why we were excited about OJ Howard once upon a time when Jameis was in Tampa. So if Jameis is the starting quarterback, I know for sure that Taysom Hill is going to take work away from him. But when Jameis is throwing, wouldn't surprise me in the least if Trautman became his best buddy on short and intermediate.
Taysom was like in his starts last year. We talked about it like in the weekly during the weeks when you know we were previewing the games. He was a one read guy. It was Michael Thomas.
Yes, and that's it.
If Michael Thomas wasn't open, he was running. Like that's why Kamara's catches were down until the Eagles game where they're actually playing from behind. Like if Michael Thomas wasn't there on the first read, he didn't go through his progressions well. He's going to go through his progressions. So. Yeah, I think Trout, I mean, what is he, 6'5", 255? Like,
yeah, and I've stood next to him. He's every bit of it. He is a large human being.
He's, I know D-Bro, if he was here, he would 100% agree with you. And like in a lot of these best ball drafts, if I miss out on the tight end position, I've been kind of just stacking some of these late tight ends that have a chance to break out and hope one of them hits. Adam Troutman, 100% one of those players. Another one is Cole Kmet, who... Yeah, we wish Jimmy Graham wasn't there because he stole all the touchdowns. But down the stretch, Cole Kmet was pretty much doubling Jimmy Graham's routes. And last six games, he averaged right around 6 targets per game. I love Darnell Mooney this year, and Allen Robinson's going to get his. But like outside of those guys, they don't really have a lot of pass catchers. Anthony Miller's not part of their plans anymore. Dave Montgomery's catches are definitely going down with Tariq Cohen there. But I don't even think like Cohen's going to come in and catch like 80 balls. So Cole Kmet, I mean... really, really good prospect still. He was, a top 50 pick a couple years ago or last year. These two tight ends, Troutman and Cole Kmet, I've done it a lot. And like, there's a very good chance one of them hits. And if they do, you're set because you're getting them the end of your draft.
I don't mind the strategy, but I might change the name of the second tight end. I don't know if I would make Kmet that guy. I think he's, To me, he profiles a little bit more of a touchdown-dependent fantasy tight end. I don't know how many games he's going to end up getting over 70 yards. I think the opportunity is capped for him. The athletic profile is good. I think they still like him as a blocker. And this is a franchise that has been trying to get the next Jimmy Graham. So much so, in fact, that they somehow found the old original flavor Jimmy Graham. But it's like... he's past his expiration date and they're still keeping him even though he's overpriced. They want that position badly, but Kmet's not the only guy there at tight end, much less in the passing game. So I feel like he's going to be more of a touchdown dependent tight end. And that's the type of guy that I'm trying to let other people draft, even in the late rounds. I'm never going to poo-poo you for saying that he's your 14th round pick, man, go for it. Again, circling back to where we started the podcast, that's exactly the type of player that you want to begin your season with and see what happens for the first few weeks. I'm not as into him as I am into Troutman. I've seen Tonyan fall in drafts. I'd rather have Tonyan. I've seen Gesicki fall in drafts. I'd rather have him.
We didn't talk about Gesicki. That's one guy I'm very out on.
Yeah, and I understand it. I totally get it.
He was like a 70-80% slot guy. Like he was literally playing slot receiver, and that is not happening this year when you have to have Fuller, Jalen Waddle, and Devontae Parker on the field. Like he will be playing more in line. Like that scares me.
I don't know if he's going to play more in line. I just don't know if he's going to get nearly the target share that he had from Tua last year, and that's what's put him into this late round mix. And we don't know what's going to happen with Zach Ertz. And I should throw Logan Thomas and PPR in this mix, too. I'd rather have Thomas.
Yeah, like if Zach Ertz gets traded to, like, the Cardinals or...
He's not going to go there. I'd be surprised if he went there.
But, like, a team that he can have a role, like, he could be the absolute wild card at this entire position. Like,
he could end up going to Jacksonville. There's been talk about him going to Jacksonville. That would be a little weird.
Buffalo's been a rumor for, like,
months. Buffalo would be an interesting one,
Buffalo
but I don't...
want to give up what the Eagles want for him. We're kind of just waiting it out.
I figured he would have gone in the package with Wentz to Indianapolis.
Yeah,
just keep the Z brothers together. But
what about another player we didn't talk about, Tyler Higbee? I'm interested to see how you feel about him because I have my concerns. I know Gerald Everett's gone. They are apparently, we want to talk about off-season reports. Jacob Harris is apparently like Sean McVay's like in love with Jacob Harris right now.
Yeah.
I just want to know if Higbee's going to be blocking because he led all tight ends in run blocking snaps last year and was like outside the top 20 in routes. And Higbee has been a story of like not being consistent, right? He had that 5-game stretch to end a couple years ago. Last year, he really had the Eagles game in week like 2 or 3. Week he scored, two. What, three touchdowns?
Oh, I thought he was. I thought that was the launching point because I was a big fan of Higbee. Like I told you, I miss on tight ends too. He was one of my. I think he was my tight end five last year. I was all about him.
And I'm sure he was there for a lot of people because the way he ended the season,
dude.
How can he not be excited?
His film at the end of 2019 was intoxicating.
Yeah.
And so I made the assumption. It's not like I can call Sean McVay and ask him. And he didn't come to me in my dream. So I had to make the assumption that the Rams would see that and see how successful Jared Goff was throwing to Higbee and say, okay, we need to improve his role in this offense. And then when it happened in week two, I said, this is it. He's going to be awesome. Everybody that drafted him along with me, we're all going to, you know, cash our ticket at the window, so to speak. And then he just evaporated. And he had a couple of touchdowns the rest of the way. And it was, you know, ultimately 8.2 PPR points per game that was boosted by the three touchdown game. If he doesn't have that three touchdown game, then his PPR points probably looks like six or five. It's gross. I did a little research already on Higbee because there's definitely some hype coming up for him. How did Stafford do throwing to his tight ends? 22% of all of his throws in 2020 went to tight ends. 27% of his passing touchdowns went to tight ends. Those were highs for Stafford over the last four seasons, but he was really close to at least the target share to his tight end group in three of the last 4 years. It was right around 21-22%. The touchdown percentage has fluctuated greatly. I'm pretty sure it has to do with who he's had at tight end. 2017, 24% of his touchdowns. 2018 and 2019, under 15%. And I already told you what happened in 2020. It's another case of opportunity lost for Higbee. He's absolutely in that same boat as Cole Kmet, where he's got to get touchdowns. There's not going to be a lot of games where he's getting 5 for 70 when Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp are there. And I'm telling you, Sean McVay is going to try and unleash a lot of deep throws that Goff was either scared to make or
he has to.
Not capable. He's probably, I mean, look at what he's brought in.
He's probably so excited about it. There was an interview like he was, I think he was like next to Stafford and just talking him up. He's probably so excited.
Well, he has to do that no matter what because of what they gave up to get him. But they had to have been so pissed off by Jared Goff and his timid nature. His average depth of throw went down at least a yard each of the last three seasons. Last year, it wasn't even 5 yards a throw. He was dinking and dinking. There was no dunking. And so now there's going to be nothing but three-pointers, slam dunks, you know, windmill jams from Matthew Stafford. And I think Sean McVay is going to be very focused on getting that element of his game going. Not to the point where it's going to be a deterrent for Cam Akers. I think Cam's going to catch a lot of passes. I think Cam Akers, I think he was a good pass catcher at FSU. And I think we're going to see that this year, and that will help out as well. But Woods, Kupp, deep ball with DeSean Jackson and Tutu Atwell. And then Akers, I think there's just too many mouths to feed. And I can't buy into Higbee for the second year in a row.
He and Gesicki really scare the crap out of me this year. But you mentioned, you know, Adam Trautman was the one guy and Cole Kmet was not the guy you mentioned. So before we get you out of here, Dave, who is the other tight end not named Adam Trautman that you have your eyes on towards the back end of fantasy drafts?
I mean, Janu would be that guy, but I'll give you one more name that and listen, if your name is Scott Angle or Alex Dunlap, or if you're in the Scott Fishbowl division with me, you need to turn off the podcast right now because I don't want to give this away to those people because that's a tight end premium league and I want to draft this guy. I'm kind of intrigued by Dan Arnold.
Going I had to Carolina. A feeling you were going there.
Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about opportunity loss. That's definitely the case in Carolina, but they brought him in. He's more of a receiver than a blocker at tight end. He's going to be a matchup problem. He's a big dude. Love the matchup week one against the Jets at the very least for him. And the schedule really isn't that bad overall. He's got a top 10 projected strength of schedule, but number one for the first 4 weeks of the season, the best schedule. So I'm going to try and get off to a good start with Dan Arnold in my tight end premium leagues. I don't see him being a regular. I don't see him being a top 10 tight end candidate, but maybe he gets off to a hot start. Maybe something happens to Robbie Anderson. Then Terrence Marshall doesn't come along as quickly as we'd hoped. And Dan Arnold finds a way to be a useful part of fantasy roster. So that's one name that I think could be just a very late type of sleeper tight end for folks this year.
And Dan Arnold last year, like his snaps weren't like where you would love them in Arizona. And he wasn't the focal point of that offense, but like he not only made, when he got targeted, it was down the field. Like, his ADOT was pushing 13. Like, he's, like, legitimately making plays down the field. And, like, when you have, first of all, I just trust Joe Brady. Like, after what he did for Robbie Anderson last year and how he used him, I just really trust Joe Brady as a play caller. So, like, he's going to put all these players in position to have success. And, like, obviously with McCaffrey, DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, Terrace Marshall, you're not worried about Dan Arnold. So, yeah, I agree. He's probably not going to be a top 10 guy, but I think he's going to have some splash weeks. And apparently him and Sam Darnold are kind of connecting in minicamp right now. And you have the Darnold to Arnold connection, which is always fun too.
Darnold to D Arnold will be fashionable, maybe just for the first few weeks of the season. And then if I can give you a sleeper in Dynasty, this is for everybody in their Dynasty leagues when you're looking for a tight end late. I like Kylan Granson going to Indianapolis. I think this year I would be stunned if he made an impact, but by next year, I think he's the type of movable chess piece type of tight end that can be serviceable for fantasy with a chance to be a productive player in fantasy.
I mean, look, Jack Doyle's entering his like ninth season. He's been hurt the last couple years. They did bring back Mo Alie-Cox, but Trey Burton's not there anymore. Like, they don't get Zach Ertz. I mean, all of a sudden, this time next year.
Even if they do.
Yeah.
What happens if they get Zach Ertz and he misses six games and he continues to struggle to separate from single coverage like we saw last year?
Sure. Yeah, it's weird. Like, tight end is obviously not the most loaded position, but, like, the names at the bottom, like, especially for Dynasty, like Dawson Knox, you know, if they don't bring in Zach Ertz, Cole Beasley's got 1 year left in his deal. Emmanuel Sanders is on a 1 year deal. All of a sudden, you know, they still have Gabriel Davis and Stephon Diggs, but he could be interesting. Who knows what happens is OJ Howard still like on pace to do anything? Because you want to talk about, you know, athletic profiles. I mean, OJ Howard was incredible coming out of college. Like, he was so exciting. I mean, there's Gerald Everett. I want Gerald Everett to go. Like, I want you have no idea how bad I wanted Gerald Everett to go to Buffalo. Just not for fantasy, just as a Bills fan. I've always thought he's been incredibly underrated as a player. Elite. He's like right behind Jonnu Smith in terms of like, and Kittle in terms of like after the catch tight ends. Like, he's that good. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you know, if Seattle airs it out this year for a full year, there could be a path for Gerald Everett if he can run more routes than Will Disley. You mentioned Dan Arnold. If we had one of the Dallas tight ends this year, like Blake Jarwin was a popular sleeper this time last year, but then he obviously tore his ACL. Dalton Schultz isn't going away. Dalton Schultz was actually really impressive last year. So
he was.
That kind of hurts that. For a minute, we had the potential of Donald Parham Jr., but that doesn't seem to be a thing. So, like, there are some names down here. Chris Herndon, I don't know if I can go back to Chris Herndon.
No. Chris Herndon, who I think was running with the second team offense.
Yeah,
I read that. That's a bad headline during
I can't. And you still have, like, you know, the dynasty tight ends like Pat Freiermuth and Hunter Long, you know, who will probably make some plays, especially I think Mike Gesicki's on his last year. So tight end's one of those positions. If you don't have one of the elite five or six guys, you know, maybe stash them in dynasty and see what happens. But Dave Richard, CBSSports.com, always a pleasure talking to you, my friend. One more time, tell everybody where they can find your work, what you guys have going on at CBS Fantasy, obviously CBS Sports HQ, which I forgot to mention when you're talking about it, not just the content and the analysis, just the layout of it looks great. Like, it's just nice to look at too, the setup and everything.
It's not a bunch of people yelling and screaming and you know, stuff that you might see on other traditional media. Which makes me thrilled about it too. Like, I'm glad it's not like that. Sometimes we yell at each other on Fantasy Football Today, but it's not like the routinely, you know, debate shows that you see on TV. So yeah, I like that part of it too. And if you Google Dave Richard CBS, you'll get a link to all my stuff. You can read what I've written and go through the projected strength of schedules for every position, get your tiebreakers ready for draft day. And we've got a podcast too, Fantasy Football Today. You can download it wherever you downloaded Fade the Chalk, and check us out, listen, hear what we've got to say. We go through every position and every player in fantasy. You know, we do the same thing that you guys do. We just, you know, try and help people win their leagues. That's the goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And always appreciate you coming on. That'll do it for the position previews, though. Quarterback, running back, receiver, tight end. And things are obviously going to change as we get through more of the offseason and preseason starts up and everything like that. But, you know, you can listen back to these if you are planning on drafting relatively soon, hopefully not too soon. But that's it for us this week. D-Bro and I will be back on Monday talking more fantasy football. I mean, we have a ton of stuff planned. It's going to be great. Make sure you guys are subscribed on iTunes, Apple, all that great stuff. Still giving away that Calvin Ridley jersey, by the way, which all you got to do is leave a rating and a review on iTunes, and you'll be entered to win that. And look, I mean, that jersey was already something you wanted, but especially with the year he's about to have, wouldn't it be a bad idea to try to win a free kit? You don't have to do anything. Just all you got to do is leave a rating and a review, and you can be entered to win a Calvin Ridley jersey. But have a great weekend, everybody. Dave, have a great weekend. Appreciate you. Best of luck in your seasons if I don't talk to you, but I'm sure we'll talk again. And I have to get revenge for the IDP league, man. I've been struggling in that league. McCaffrey last year, I limped to the playoffs, but just wasn't enough. But I got to get that league, by the way, is so fun because IDP, mm-hmm. we don't just, it's not even like you just have
it's four. It's not three IDPs. It's like nine.
Right. It's so fun. So I'm excited about that draft as well, and I'm sure we'll talk to you down the line. Again, have a great weekend, everybody. This has been Fade the Chalk. We are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.